Blog Talk Radio.
Applewhite, and I'm here to discuss a number of things with you today from my upcoming book, which is Rehabilitating Our Illness Mentality. And this is part of chapter 3 that we're dealing with, is believing and why people don't believe. Believe you about your illness, and you feel uncomfortable about talking about it, or believe that, or your belief system in yourself. Do you believe that you are ill and have no choice? Do you believe that there's no sympathy for you? Do you believe that you must give up? Or do you believe that you must roll up your sleeves and do the best you can? And I hope you believe that you can do the best you can. And that's why Professor Applewhite comes to you over the internet waves from China to Nicaragua to Nigeria, to China to all over the world. We broadcast a message to everyone out there, that as we are one moment a student, the next moment we are transformed into teachers. Because we are always learning and we are always teaching someone to become a better human being. From the uncle to the nephew, the aunt to the niece, the parents, the preachers, the teachers. So we welcome you this morning. I'm so happy to be here because I do want to give a special, special love message and peace message to all of our listeners out there. But I want to point out especially that our Tom Baker, our VP, our Vice President of Operations for Students, is in the hospital, and we are going to miss him this show. And we pray, Tom, that you will get well soon and join us back here on the Student to Teacher, the Student radio show on the internet. And we also thank the staff of White Apple Institute, any of the board members that call in or students that call in on this Saturday morning, and we thank you for your time and effort to do that. Well, let's start with discussing our description today. And remember, this is part three of repairing our illness mentality. Okay? Gosh, God is good. Whatever we call God, whatever name we call God by, God is a good God. And we are blessed to be able to talk to each other like this. Please make sure that if you're listening right now through the internet and you want to call in, or any of you that call in while I'm on the air, please feel free to share your comments, or if you wish, just to listen. I'm putting on the chat now for those of you who wish to chat with me while the show is on, and I will be able to get back with you as soon as possible after the show ends. So we have loaded on the chat right now, and we are getting ready to describe our show. There we go. It says that Professor Applewhite and the staff of White Apple Institute share a very intense discussion about how illness mentality is a release similar to an illusory escape, like an illusion from responsibilities and obligations to self and family. So many times this illness mentality can really hurt us and our families. It may become a choice to believe you are too ill to attend school or go to work. Some feel the necessity to exaggerate their symptoms or give in to belief systems that overcome our motivation. Some of us choose to associate with others who have no desire but to wait for their disability checks and watch soap operas, the judge shows. And so we ask that you listen to our show today with great intensity, with great seriousness, because I'll be bringing on and discussing some of the great writers on this particular subject. I don't know if you are aware that I'm a certified rehabilitation counselor, which means that my area of discipline is in educational psychology. However, I am a rehabilitation counselor that works within that field. So I write programs for schools and I teach teachers. And many times, of course, this falls into the realm of special education because of my background. And so I've heard a lot of teacher comments about students, especially those that are ready to transition out into the to the world of adulthood, early adulthood, but it's still adulthood, and they are not prepared emotionally or financially to deal with some of the problems that are out there. So take your time and really, if you don't get all the things that I'm saying in today's show, and especially if you know someone who could benefit more from the words that I'm saying, make sure you play the archived show for them so that they can indeed hear some of the things that I'm saying and hopefully become somewhat motivated to do more than wait for a check every month and give up on the possibilities. You've heard us in past shows discussing the fear associated with leaving the disability roles, the attendance roles, being associated with the social securities or the government securities in our particular country, and not wanting to move from that because of the possibility of losing those benefits. Those discussions have been very, very useful, because sometimes it is necessary for us to keep those benefits. And we talk about how we can continue to still be involved in the process of life with still keeping our disability ratings intact. Sometimes, my friends, that becomes a job in itself, is just running around and getting doctor's statements signed and fighting for your rights, advocating for what you believe you need in order to just survive. But I have to say it, I'm so proud of those of you who make an effort to go to school, go to college with mental issues that you're dealing with, from everything from bipolar to, yes, schizophrenia. I've had students graduate with schizophrenia. I've seen students with breathing machines, with oxygen attached to wheelchairs, and graduate with AA degrees and move on to a university. And you say, some of you may say, that's impossible. But I'm telling you, it's true. We have in the United States and in most European countries, the universities, the higher level learning, the higher education learning, has installed offices for disabled students, or students with disabilities, we prefer to say. Because your disability doesn't define who you are. You're a person with a disability and with other things that you're dealing with. So don't define yourself if you can try to work on that language that you say to yourself, or you know someone else that says, I have a disability, I can't do anything. Try to motivate them to listen to the show and motivate them to see the possibilities by taking them on a college campus. Invite them out to lunch on a college campus. I promise you, you will see someone that has a wheelchair. You will see many, many students that have invisible disabilities, or non-visible disabilities would be a better way to say that. And they're still there. They might not come up and tell you, I have bipolar disorder, or I'm dealing with anxiety and panic attacks. But I promise you that they're there, and they're still rolling up their sleeves. And believe me, I know it is not easy. I know it's not easy from dealing with my students in that particular area. And I also know it's not it's very difficult from a personal perspective, because I myself roll up my sleeves in order to get through certain programs and certain teaching assignments. So thank you much for joining us this morning again. So let's take apart part of the description of the show this morning. And let's talk about the illusion that we create about our illness mentality, for those of us that have an illness mentality. Some of us have a wellness mentality, which is just the opposite. It doesn't mean that the disability or the suffering or pain that you may be dealing with has gone away. It doesn't mean that. The wellness mentality means that we find a way to overcome what we are dealing with. We find a way to change our attitudes about what we're dealing with. It is a choice. It is a choice every day to get up and say, this is going to be a lovely day. A lovely day. A lovely day. Or we can make the choice and say, this is another horrible day. And I'm laying in the bed again. And I have to get up in a wheelchair again. Or maybe I can't even get up in a wheelchair. But I'm here to tell you that I praise God that I'm able to go across the internet waves and to reach out into your hearts and your minds and share with you the possibilities that even if you cannot go on a college campus and take classes, that are we not grateful that our illness mentality does not stop us, or our mentality in any way does not stop us from taking an online course? How about an online course? One course. You could take it in any area that you wish. There's so many out there. And it will be something to stimulate your mind. If you're not comfortable with computers, there are books out there to read. Don't get stuck in the television or get stuck in looking out the window and wishing that you could have the life back that you had before. Because what is past is exactly what it is. The past, P-A-S-T, has passed, P-A-S-S-E-D. And so, therefore, there's not much we can do with what has passed on, but dwell on it and let it stop us. And then we start developing that illness mentality. And we find no relief in that. The illness mentality gives us no relief. It just creates an illusion that brings even more sadness to us, because some way or another, you're escaping the responsibility of taking care of yourself. Some people, some of us, deal with grievance more than others. Some of us choose to deal with being gratified. I don't mean immediate gratification. I mean gratified over a time period, just believing that, okay, I'm hearing Professor Applewhite talking right now about this illness mentality, and, you know, I do have a piece of that. In my mind, in my heart, I'm thinking, I can't do it. I can't go forward. But then there's this little light that shines inside that says, yes, I can. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Let it shine, let it shine, and let it shine. As God puts that light inside of us, that power, that spirit that keeps our blood rushing through our heart, even when we sleep, that's what you've got to hold on to. You can't let go of that, because you are too beautiful for that. Inside, you're beautiful. if you allow yourself to see that or inspire others not to be in so much grievance about what they've gone through, but to be in gratitude that they are alive in some form or fashion. And whatever you choose, your belief system is that you've been chosen to go through this, that this is a test for you. However you interpret what's going on with you and why you have an illness in your mind or in your body, in your physical body, why you have heart problems, why you have cancer. And then if you allow that to happen and you start developing this attitude of gratitude, as my friend Jewel Diamond Taylor mentions many times in her writings, this attitude of gratitude can actually help us build an act of helping ourselves and helping even others. I just want to talk about some principles here, principles that can some way be formulated in your own mind, okay? And for some unknown reason, I have seen that people who help others, reaching out, volunteering their time, somehow produce the energy for themselves to keep going. I don't understand it, but I know it happens. That as we begin to focus on other people and their issues and helping them get through their issues, helping them develop an attitude of gratitude instead of being in this grievance, that somehow or another it transforms us. As Beatrice Wright, a great writer of physical disability as psychological approach, she talks about this act of helping and how it can either lead to goodwill or just a firm interpersonal relationship. Or it can lead to ill will, personal hurt, and the disintegration of our social relationships with others, So it depends on how you want to look at being grateful. They did a study where they looked at different characteristics. In one study, Beatrice Wright looks at 24, or she encourages you to look at the results of a test that shows 24 subjects rated cripples. And they talked about their character traits. And some of them came out with self-reliance. Wow. That's an amazing fact, because this study was done many years ago. As a matter of fact, believe it or not, in 1944. So you're talking some years ago. But I thought it was interesting to look at how, first off, people called themselves crippled, handicapped, disabled, and they defined themselves in those ways. But they also found that they had this area of self-reliance and persistence that they rated closest to their ideal of themselves. So they had become aware that sometimes if they're not persistent, if they don't roll up their sleeves, that they can develop that illness mentality and it can hold them down. It's like the way they became aware of themselves, they became so aware of themselves that they, this awareness could either weaken them or make them stronger. And so they didn't want pity. They didn't want help where they could help themselves. And therefore they told their helpers, which we sometimes now call caregivers, they told them, I must become aware of my own feelings and needs so that I can stop from being detoured away from self-pity, from in any way obscuring their determination as to whether help should be offered or taken. And the helper or the caregiver must do the same. We encourage caregivers to do the same, teachers to do the same, to encourage the student on their own merit, on their own energy that individually pumps this strong motivation inside of them that makes them put both feet on the bed on the floor when they can. Put both feet on the floor and do your best to move. Movement is life, my friends. So roll up your sleeves. I encourage you. Roll up your sleeves and do your best to at least try. Because when you try, you are not a failure. When you try, you will not develop an illness mentality that will hold you back. When you at least try to move your hands or your legs and speak or listen, on that note, you become awakened to the fact that you must, in some way, develop a better illusion than the one that you had, that you had nothing to offer anyone anymore. You have so much to offer yourself. Start with you first. Look at what you can do for self. And that doesn't mean being selfish. That means that's the only way that it's going to happen, it's going to start. I often in my classes bring up a reality of when you sit on a plane, the flight attendant comes on and says, please make sure you put on your seatbelt. All of us are familiar with these guidelines. And then she says something very interesting, or the tape that you look at. Sometimes they have DVDs now, videos of what we're supposed to do if the plane starts wiggling or whatever. I hope I'm not causing any anxiety for those of you that are not flyers. But this example can be placed in any situation. But what happens is that they encourage you, if an oxygen mask falls, to put it on yourself first. Think about that for a moment. Put the oxygen mask on yourself first. And when you do that, then you are able to help someone else, especially your own child or someone who cannot put on their mask because they're having a panic attack or they're unable to and they're losing their breath. You cannot do it You cannot help someone else to breathe if you cannot breathe yourself. So that's why I mean, that's why I'm implying or encouraging you to look at yourself, your self-image, your self-strength, your self-motivation, your own personal development. When you begin to start doing that, especially some of the fathers, some of our veterans, who are now veterans who were very active soldiers in prior wars, and they come back home beaten, bruised, hurt, mangled, loss of limbs, and many times with post-traumatic stress disorder that interrupts their flow of thought. For those of you who are dealing with that, please let me encourage you to look at yourself first. Then after you do that and find your way, develop your pathway, then I want to encourage you to turn towards those that you love, your family. It may indeed be your own children, your own wife or husband, for those women veterans out there. And find a way to help them to see your strength. I can't tell you the joy that can come from just doing those two things. The rest of your life, the rest of your future, whether it's a temporary disabling condition or whether it's a lifetime disabling condition, that in some way you will be able to help yourself and others in a way I can't even explain in words. And for those helpers out there, those caregivers, I encourage you to stand back for a moment before you rush forward. And I'm saying this, of course, with great caution for safety. If safety is an issue, then of course you do want to step in and help. But if safety is not an issue, and you see an individual trying to exercise their self-development, their personal self, their personal power, please allow them to do that. With 26 minutes remaining, I want to give our guest call-in number again and encourage you to call in and talk to Professor Applewhite if you have any of these issues that you're dealing with. The number is, if you're out of the 646 area, of course you would dial a 1 first. But the number is 1-646-727-3758. So let me continue on here with some of the recommendations that have come across. And from some of the writers and some of the research that's out there. Again, there was another study conducted that brought out some principles about personal grooming. And that is one of the areas that I find that when we're developing our self-image that we sometimes lack, because we feel like we're ready to give up. Don't give up. Start with some personal grooming. start with feeling better about the way you look. It will help you with the way you feel. Can you imagine for a minute that there are people out there that do not have any limbs? I mean any limbs, no arms and no legs. I know one, his name is Nick, and he professes that his Lord, Jesus Christ, has helped him to get through the some of the most horrifying conditions that you can imagine, without arms and without legs. And in the same voice, I've heard people say that in similar situations in their own countries and in maybe different cultures and different religions, that their God, either Allah or Jehovah, whatever your God is called, whatever you profess to be, that have helped them to gain that strength. Wow. What strength this man has. I've seen him. I've watched him. He lives by himself now. He has his own apartment. He walks on two very small feet that are attached to his abdomen area. And he has his doorknobs set up in a way where he can open his door with what is left of part of his upper arm, his upper shoulder. And he can open his own door. And he gets into a specially customized wheelchair. And he's able to get all around town. And he praises. He praises his God. He praises love. Can you imagine that for a moment? Is depression going to be an issue with someone in that position? Sure. There are going to be moments of depression, but he gets over it. And he allows his wellness mentality to overcome his illness mentality. Wow. Isn't that something? He allows his wellness mentality to overcome his illness mentality. We always say in the field of rehabilitation, we encourage people not to compare themselves with others. But then you will find those who have greater issues than you do or lesser. When you start looking around. So comparing yourself to others will never, ever work for you. But I'll tell you what. As I was speaking to someone just recently who told me the story of a woman who was stabbed continuously by an ex-boyfriend, and has lost her ability to use the bathroom by herself and needs some assistance but has no insurance. She needs medical assistance. She needs catheters and supplies. And we're going to help her through White Apple Institute to find resources for her. But this is not so much about her right now. It's the person that told me about her and what she said. She said, I learned something when I sat and I listened to her and the horror that she must have gone through. To be stabbed so many times, to be alive, to want to live. And she even mentioned going to school in the future, going back to school. Wow. That's awesome. She said when she listened to her, it took her mind off of her problems. And we've heard that many times. When you listen to someone else, when you really take the time to listen to somebody else's story, you may indeed find yourself looking in the mirror of your own soul and saying, it's not that bad. Are you indeed comparing yourself to others? No, not at that point. You're not comparing yourself to them. You're just accepting that you have something that you can do with your life, and they have something they can do with their life. At whatever level you are at, you begin to adapt, truly adapt to the circumstances. And this is really important for those of you who have recently lost jobs or taken great cuts in pay in order for your employer to keep you. And especially if you've developed any depression during this process. I'm not saying don't get to a doctor and don't get that looked at, because it's just related to a job loss. Because sometimes having a job that you've had for many years could have been masking depression or bipolar disorder or many other things out there. So it's good to get checked up, but it's also good to recognize our blessings, like the lady that was stabbed so many times and unable to get up and walk like many of us. She saw her blessings even through all of that. She sees her blessing in the fact that she's in a country right now where she can at least fight for medical insurance, for some help. We're grateful for the lessons she brings to us. We'll take a quick break here to thank our sponsors for White Apple Institute. For all of you out there who send in a check, our new address for sending in a check is 701 South Dobson Road, number 431, Mesa, Arizona, 85282. And we thank you very much for your donations. We thank you very much for the time that you give to even listen to our archive shows. And for those of you with our 16 minutes remaining, if you wish to call in, please do at 1-646-727-3758 or call us later at White Apple Institute 480-471-8082. As we move on, I wanted to just spend a few moments speaking about how some people feel the necessity to exaggerate their condition in order to get the attention they need. Now, many family members
and friends listening to this know someone who's done this or is still doing it. It's a cry for attention, I grant you that. But it's also a cry for affection, for time, for hug. And if you've done all those things, then you need to confront that individual and say, how much of this, how much of your pain and your suffering do you think that I can help you with, that anyone can help you with? Now, you may indeed run into someone who says, nothing. Nobody can do nothing for me. And you can very politely and lovingly say, yes, we can. And we already do every day by just listening to you. Listening to you talk about what's going on with you is an act of our love. But it has to be that it's a very real situation that we're dealing with. And you don't have to use, depending on the level of intelligence and the level of your relationship with this individual, you don't have to say exaggerate or we think that you may be exaggerating the circumstances, because that can be a volatile, very, very explosive situation. But if you feel close enough to say it, please say it. Because you want to move that person from being a constant complainer and someone who exaggerates their illness mentality and gives in to a belief system that won't allow them to become motivated. Tell them that you're here to help them stay motivated and that you believe in their potential. Tell them that you found a support group for them where they can associate with people who want to get out of the house and do something for themselves. Going to a support group is very similar to going to a job. There's a lot of work involved for many of us in just getting dressed. And I mean, the mental dress up is the beginning. Mentally, just imagining what you're going to wear and how you're going to get that, those feet on the floor, and how you're going to get into the car or the medical van that's coming to pick you up. Believe me, that is work for many, many people. So praise them. Let them know that you appreciate the work, the effort that they're putting forth. And attend a support group with someone. AA reports, Alcoholics Anonymous reports a great change in individuals, an expediency, in other words, a quickness of wellness when someone else is there for them, for that individual. And that's why if they don't have a family member, and even if they do, they still assign a sponsor to an individual, and it works. That sponsor is there for them. And so, in a sense, White Apple Institute provides a sponsor, someone to be there for you, to help you through the rough moments, the rough times, when you feel like giving up. My dear sister, my dear brothers, sisters and brothers, wake up and recognize
that if you are a teacher and you see someone in your classroom that is experiencing grave difficulties, encourage them to associate with those who have a desire to get better, a desire not to wait every month for a disability check while they sit for 30 days. For 30 days, imagine that, in front of a television set, or on a couch, or in their wheelchairs, not even wanting to go outside and smell the fresh air, the birds singing, hear the birds singing, and go somewhere where there's water, a brook, a lake, with someone that cares about them, and talk about their dreams and how, okay, you've had lots of dreams about all the things you wanted to do before. Here you wanted to be a ballet dancer and now you sit in a wheelchair. Or you had a trucking business and now you can no longer operate a truck. Or do the things that you used to do. But let's turn that around now. And let's see how we can come closer to what you had, to what you dreamed about doing, to what you were motivated to do prior to this illness or accident that caused you to feel a loss of motivation. We want to repair our illness mentality. We're striving for it, and we need someone not necessarily to take us by the hand. But if you dig taking somebody by the hand, please reach out and take it. If you dig putting your arms around somebody and hugging them and telling them, don't worry about a thing, because every little thing's going to be all right. If you feel those things, do them. But always respect the other person's space, because sometimes people do not want to be hugged, or they don't want their space invaded. I want you to start imagining, I want you to start thinking about wellness, your wellness mentality. I encourage you, my dear friends, to reach out and help someone who is in this type of situation. Because I'll tell you something, we don't know necessarily what our purpose is here. We can only imagine what our purpose could be. Sometimes we have small purpose, a very small purpose. And sometimes we have very large purposes with other people and with ourselves that we have to deal with. But I know one thing. I know if we begin to dig deep inside, I know that when we start recognizing and awakening to the great power that's within us, that, as I said earlier, keeps our heart pumping. That's it. Remember something. As you either help someone yourself who is going, let me say that again. When you help someone who is going through something that you feel is so much worse than what you're dealing with. Or someone is helping you because of what you're dealing with. I know that there's times when there's sympathy that you don't want. And Beatrice talks about, and other writers talk about the sympathy that could be rejected because of the desire for privacy. Now think about that for a minute. We have privacy, but when we are dealing with someone who has been injured or has become ill, this desire for privacy happens. Or when those of us wish to hide their disability or at least act as if it doesn't make any difference to them whether they have a disability. This unwanted sympathy or this rejection of you displaying sympathy, don't take it personal. Know that sometimes a person just wants to be left alone because there's a process of mourning the loss. And because he or she may not even want to burden others with what they're going through, their troubles. Or, as we spoke about earlier, dealing with their own self-development, they may reject sympathy because they need time to get a hold of what has just happened to them and the changes that are going on in their life. And I've seen this happen with those who face depression. Depression, a very serious illness, mental illness. But I promise you that your love and your sharing of light with them and the encouragement to stay awakened to who they are is a gift you will love to share, and is a gift that later on down the road, it might not be immediately, that your recipient, in other words, the person that you are giving this love and kindness to and this sympathy to, will appreciate how you handle it. What you do is going to make all the difference to helping an individual change their illness mentality to a wellness mentality. Especially when you look at sympathy that's mixed with pity. That's one that's really easy to see. And people with a person with a disability does not want to see sympathy with pity. So next week, we'll start again on the next part of repairing our illness mentality. And I thank you so much for taking the time. Listen. And not only listen with your ears, but with your heart. For the music that you have provided for us,